Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That dreams come true, and who would have thought I'd end up with you? And who would have thought what they said was true? But it wasn't you all. Light and darkness come through.
Hi.
How you doing, Emily?
Hey, I'm good. How's it going?
I'm better for seeing you and making your acquaintance.
Yes, I thought this window would be difficult, and look, it is. let me move my position over.
No worries, do your thing. Get comfortable.
Here. I keep we all are doing so many Zooms, and I keep having the same background, and I'm like, really? So every time I try to have a different background, it never works out for me. So
well, that's the old phrase, isn't it? If it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. Just
Just
stay in the safe spot.
yeah, exactly. So I guess this will be it. So how's it going?
I'm good. I'm very well. And I've just come back home after a week in London and Brighton. So I've had my first kind of time out of the year. Went to see some friends and, kind of mingle, which we obviously haven't really been able to do for a long time. So yeah, I feel like reconnected and revitalized and good. Happy to be alive, which is important, isn't it?
Yeah. That's exactly it. So
how about you?
I'm great. It's springtime, I think. And finally, have this book coming out, which has been a long time waiting. But yeah, it's been nice. I live up in Carlsbad. So are we on air right now?
Oh, I record from the start. Yeah, I just hit the ground running. Yeah. It's always on air. But yeah, we're all good.
But no, everything is great. Everything is great. Summertime feels like it's getting warmer. The winter's gone past. I live on the water. Just went for a surf, so I'm happy.
Well, yeah, that's one thing that I do miss is being near the ocean. I've never really lived any kind of, close proximity to the sea, but being in Brighton where I've just been for the week, there's something different about the pace of life in coastal or port towns, isn't there? If there's a nice beach and the atmosphere on that kind of seafront is, as all the nice ones are, relaxed, chilled, soulful, just good vibes, I think that does feed into your soul and your energy and your whole outlook to life, I find.
Oh, absolutely. I've actually kind of opposite. I've always lived on the water my whole life.
Right.
So I'm from San Diego, and then I lived in Sydney, Australia for 10 years. So I was on the water there. And so, but sometimes I think, gosh, if I didn't need to live on the water, I could move to so many weird, interesting places. But my need for the ocean and surfing is always kept me right close to the water. So, but it's nice. I like being in a very calm area, and and then when you have to go off into traveling for work or whatnot, doing that. I was just actually talking, you had just interviewed Eric Melvin recently, and he's my neighbor. So he moved down here where we're up Carlsbad and Sanitas, and it's just it's so it's nice. And there's a little pocket of our friends that live up here. So yeah, it's good.
Well, but... yeah, and shout out to Eric Melvin, because I think if we hadn't have had the conversation that we had, and it went into all the amazing places that it went, obviously you heard that, and that's kind of how we got in touch. So
yeah.
Thank you to Melvin. Totally. And yeah. I mean, I've been kind of, I've read the whole book. I've immersed myself in that. I've checked out a couple of other podcasts that you've been doing recently and just trying to, you know, learn more about your life and your amazing contribution to, you know, the communities, which we both obviously hold dear. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that you, you know, love music and art, because that's what, you know, that's the quest you're on. I think I first probably heard about the work that you were doing, I want to say, on the Flogging Molly cruise. 2000 and maybe 18 or 19. I was DJing on that, and I'm sure there was a bunch of stuff because Cab and Hensley were both on there. Obviously, Hensley would have been anyway, but Cab was there as well. And I'm sure they were selling or auctioning off certain stuff. And I remember that was kind of way, maybe where I first became aware of what you're doing. And I just think it's so positive and so cool and so interesting. And I would love to, if you're up for it, kind of first of all, learn a bit about you and your journey and what, you know, led to the birth of this amazing project, Punk Rock and Paintbrushes. But I feel like to get there, I want to know more about you first. Is that all right if we pry open?
yeah, I'm ready. I can answer questions or share.
So what took you to Australia? Was that love? Was it work? Was it just the geographical allure of life down under? What was it that took you down there, and how you said you're down there 10 years, right?
Yeah. So I was living in San Diego, going to San Diego State College here, and just knew that I kind of wanted a little bit of a change, and English speaking country and surfing, but it wasn't like something I've dreamed of for many years of my life, but I decided to move there. So I moved there when I was 19. And actually an interesting story that I don't share all the time, but I was a soccer player growing up, and I actually went to San Diego State for soccer on a soccer scholarship, got heavily injured and stopped. And so I went to Australia and ended up playing water polo at Sydney University, which was a wonderful experience. And so I went over there for college, basically, is what it was, or for university, and then came back and, you know, kept continuing on here and finished that up and thought, you know, I kind of want to go back there. I don't kind of want to like hold off on the, like a whole adult thing. And so I would go
I'll
back
drink to that.
Yeah. I'm still actually holding off on that.
Still
so.
Same.
Yeah. Going well. So, but yeah, so I then went, moved to Sydney and lived there, kind of in and out for about 10 years, but had some time back in San Diego. I would come back for the Warp Tour for the summertime here in the US. And so I did that actually for many summers. So I would go to Australia for 10 months, come here for 2 months, do Warp Tour, go back and forth. But I ended up, I always say, oh, I just moved back, but no, it's been like over 10 years now back in San Diego, which is so crazy to me, because when I moved to Sydney, I thought it was my forever. I thought I'd live there forever, and I didn't, which is totally fine. And I'm super happy to be back. And so that's how, like, what initially got me to Sydney. But I was working mostly in music over there, doing like bookings and putting on shows. I actually was booking a lot of US bands in Southeast Asia, which was kind of random. I was working for a company there, but doing, you know, a tour in Australia is like four stops and then it's over, you know. It's
what is it? Brisbane, Melbourne, like Sydney, Perth.
Yeah. And it's like the same circuit. It's like, oh my God, really? I'm in Brisbane again, or doing out the same. It's just, you know, it's kind of uninteresting in some ways, but it was okay. So yeah, I was over there for a while, but landed back home in San Diego 10 plus years ago, and very happy to be here. So,
and how about, because the Warp Tour is this fascinating traveling circus of kind of organized chaos, it seems like, from the outside in. I never got to partake in it, sadly. But, you know, I've obviously been around festival environments my whole life. So I'd love to. How does that involvement begin? First of all, how do you start out working with and for the Warp Tour?
So I actually, for the first year I did it was in 2002, And that band, the Ataris, actually, they're like, still, they're like family to me. So that was kind of, I always blame them actually on everything. So, but yeah, so kind of like started working with them. But, you know, Kevin Lyman has this podcast right now and it's so great. And you just can't explain it. It's one of those things, like you try to explain it, but you can't. And it's just like this thing in your mind, like I have to go out. And, you know, for me being young at the time, it was like, I have to go out and sell merch for 10 hours in 110 degree weather. Like this just has to happen. And I'm like, who the hell would want that? Like, it's so crazy. And it's so funny, but you just have this, like, it's like this thing you must do for however long. And then your time stops and then it just stops and it's totally great. And, you know, my last year was, oh my gosh, you know, 13 years ago or something now. But what's such an amazing thing is, I was just talking about Kevin in a different podcast, is that all of the artists from Punk Rock and Paintbrushes are from Warped Tour, are like, we're friends from Warped Tour, you know, back, gosh, 19 years ago or whatever year it was, and continuing on. You know, some of them I did meet in the last 10 years, friends of friends or whomever they are. But for the most part, you know, that's where it started from. And it's such a beautiful thing because, you know, there's these things that come in our life, such as, you know, me at 19 selling merch on Warped Tour in the hot, in the heat. And you're like, what am I doing here? You know? And then, however many 20 years later, it's like, oh, okay. That was the purpose of it all. You know, that we are now all this community and, you know, lifting each other up with art and showcasing each other's talents in ways that, you know, we didn't do 20 years ago, but now we're doing, and it's so great to do.
Yeah, you touch on there what I think is really special about the work that you do and why I wanted to get you on the show, and kind of getting to flick through the book today and really get a sense of that community spirit, which, you know, is really at the heart, I think, of punk and why punk is different as a genre. First of all, I guess it isn't, it's more than that. But as a musical style, it just seems different to metal and indie and these other guitar-based sounds, right, and communities, in that everybody does seem to be kind of bound by a commonality, you know, whether that's a philosophical thing or just like an emotional family. There's something, I think there's a thread, which if you're still in like the punk game, whatever your role is at a certain point in life and you are a lifer, you are kind of just intangibly, or whatever the word would be, like linked, forever bound to everybody that's in the scene, right? That's how I've always felt about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, some of my closest friends are people I've known for, 20 years or so. And from, you know, early music days and everything. And that's the really trippy thing, is that we haven't seen each other in the last year and a half. You know, it's been this lull, really. And so people haven't crossed paths on tours or on, you know, or on festival dates or whatnot. They've been separated because of the pandemic. And so it's nice to be able to bring these people together. There can't be a festival or a concert anytime soon, but we can have, you know, art shows and so forth. And so, yeah, I think it's one of those things, you know, we have our art exhibit at Punk Rock Bowling, and we, you know, it's very, you know, punk rock and all the kids that come or whatever, you know. But, you know, me and my staff were there, and we had someone say, you know, they go, oh, wow, you guys look like punk rock stewardess, because we all have these, like, you know, little outfits. And I'm thinking, like, hey, I am punk rock, I swear. You know, I used to look more punk rock when I was 16 years old, but, you know, and that's it. It's like, it doesn't leave us, you know, it's always there. And it's the funny thing.
Growing old disgracefully, right?
yeah, exactly. And so it's just that thing of like, I was just telling a friend of mine this morning, we are doing this whole project on, it's called Music Matters, and we're raising money for different nonprofits, and we're releasing art prints. And the art prints are by the artist or photographer, and then with the musician signs the prints. So it's this whole campaign we're doing, we're releasing them once a month. So I was in contact with Milo Ackerman from The Descendants. And I found out, you know, he lives on the East Coast. It was like, okay, well, let's knock a couple of these out when I'm over there. So Greg Graffin lives on the East Coast. So I flew out. I was like, okay, I'm going to the East Coast. So I flew out to do the project with Greg and Milo. And I was telling a friend, I go, yeah. And they're both college professors. And it's like two men who are so punk rock, punk rock legends. I mean, their bands are just the most amazing bands we can think of, but they're these grown men who are extremely intelligent and punk, you know, and university professors. And I loved it. It was so wonderful to know that, you know, there is this other side of it. And it's funny you said, you know, you look at punk rock and then with the book, we have a variety of artists in it. And someone like Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5, he's in it. And some people will look and go, oh, okay, Jurassic 5's hip hop. And it's like, you know, me and Charlie did an art tour together a few years ago, or it was just him and I for a month. And it's like, that guy's punk rock. He is punk, you know? And it's like, you think about his life and it's like, that's really what we're talking about. You know, we are touching upon the punk rock of the music, but also the lifestyle and the mindset and all of that. And that's why we chose specifically all of these artists in the book, because they're all that in their own way.
Yeah. Well, hip hop is very much the same in this. It's a DIY approach, isn't it? And it's all about just picking up the pen, the paper, you know, the spray can. It's exactly the same culture of just like, don't wait until somebody's given you approval to, you know, start a group or whatever. It's like you just pick up the instruments that you need to get it done and get it done. And skateboarding and punk are obviously so intrinsically forever linked. And yeah, I mean, the skaters that you've got involved in this book and in the project to full stop, just, you know, again, icons of their game.
Yeah, and that is a really interesting element, I guess, to punk rock and paintbrushes, because the skateboarders, Steve Caballero, Christian Asoy, Jason Adams, Matt Hensley, you know, those are our main skaters. And when I started first like working with Steve Caballero, you know, I skated as a kid, but that was about it. And I'm watching the people, you know, speak to Steve, have their interactions. And I kind of was like, you know, what's going on here? Like, cause I don't know much about his skateboarding career, to like, be totally honest. I was never involved in skateboarding, that world, you know. We were both on, you know, Warped Tour back in the day, and I would love watching the skaters on the vert ramp. And that was the extent of it, or going to X Games, but I don't know. I never followed it. So when I started working with Steve and then Christian, it was like, oh, this is interesting. So I finally, you know, I was like, Steve, you gotta tell me about your life more one day. Like, we gotta really tell me about it. And he's told me, you know, and you know, they're both so humble, but it's like, they're going to tell me about their life and, you know, what they've done. But I mean, it's just so wonderful. And I'll just share this, like, one experience is Steve started listening to the band Rise Against, which are a very important part of punk rock and paintbrushes, as you probably learned about. And one of my friends in the band is a huge skateboarding fan, you know? So we were at Punk Rock Bowling and they were both like equally excited to meet each other. And so, you know, Steve being fans of each other, you know, and these are two men that are, you know, 40, 50 years old. And yeah, they met up, and it was just so magical, because it's like they look up to each other, punk rock and skateboarding back and forth, but in different ways, you know. And it was such a cool thing. And I see that a lot with the skateboarders, you know, I have, and not naming names, but we did a photo shoot recently, and I had one of my musicians come up, you know, and he's like, is that Christian Asoy? It's like, yeah. He's like, can you introduce me? And like, this is a well-known musician, you know? And yeah, he's like, yeah. Oh my gosh. And it was like, oh my God, that's so great. Cause you know, and so they're all like excited about each other, you know, they all like are motivated with each other. And these are, you know, and these are men and women who have had 20, 30, 40 years of success. And so it's really, really cool to have that like cross-pollination of skateboarding and punk rock music or hip hop, you know, and have that all, you know, having Charlie Tuna when he was at the photo shoot, you know, and he's looking at people like, oh my gosh, this is so crazy. Like, I, you know, remember this and that. And he came out, we did a, like a virtual type of art show at Christmas time. It was, I guess now we could share, but Fat Mike lives up in LA and has this big property. So we actually held it on his tennis court, which we tried to not make it look like that, but it was on Mike's tennis court, you know? And so we're all hanging out and Charlie's just tripping out, hasn't seen him in 25 years, you know? And so this community is bringing these people back together that haven't seen each other in 25 years. So you have Charlie Tuna, you know, the master of hip hop, and Fat Mike, the, you know, a great punk rock band, and just like totally stoked to see each other again after that many years. And it's such a great thing. And that's what we're trying to do as well with, you know, punk rock and paintbrushes. So.
Yeah, it just seems from the outside looking in, as somebody who understands all of those worlds very well, like just so organic. And, you know, it's clear to me that everybody who is involved is there for all the right reasons. And, you know, that one example that you just shared is, you know, a case in point of how everybody's just a fan of everybody else, no matter how successful they are. You know, you can still be a fan and be the biggest star in skateboarding or in punk rock or whatever it is.
Totally.
And what's even more interesting to me, and I hope you take this compliment well, or I'm sure you will, but I don't know whether you're comfortable with compliments, but it's coming at you anyway. For me, it takes a very special kind of a person to bring all of these people together. And, you know, I don't know whether it's solely you, but it's clear from reading the book and, you know, just sort of seeing the Instagram reflections of this world that you're very much like the kind of the caretaker of this community. And that takes a special kind of a character and a soul to bring these people together in this kind of a way. So I'd love to kind of get an insight into where you think that maybe comes from in you. Have you always been somebody that just likes to facilitate meetings of minds and help strengthen groups of people by bringing them together and elevating each other? Is that something you think you've always been aware of, or did it set in at a certain point and then did you start implementing it from then going forward?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't say, oh, I'm an introvert, because that people be like, what? But at the same time, you know, I am someone who I know what I can give. And I, you know, I, like I said, I am a surfer, I live by myself. And I have a lot of, I know what I need from myself to give out. I see a lot of people that give too much. And then they're just like, there's nothing there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, when we started one of our first shows, we had five or six artists on the show. And every person is so different. Every artist I work with is so different, but they're all very similar. And I do understand it. But when I started working with you know, any of the artists, it's not just, I don't start working with them and the next day go, oh, I get it now. No, it's everyone's different. It's like everyone we come across, you have a different relationship with. I always tell people, I go 20% of my job is to work with art. You know, 80% of my job is to work with individuals and people. And a lot of these people are, well, we have men and women, but a lot of them are, say, 50 or so year old men. And so, and some of them are very successful musicians. So people just assume that, oh, they know they're great at this and that. And, you know, no, that's not it at all. You need to motivate people constantly, no matter who they are, what they do. I've been a production assistant for some pop acts, rock bands, large group, you know, very large popular groups. And I've dealt with those type of personalities. And it doesn't matter if you're headlining Coachella or Lollapalooza. You know, you still are human and you still need to know that what you're doing is appreciated and everything. And so I think with the artists and the people in the book and in Punk Rock and Paintbrushes, we, you know, I need to understand them individually. You know, I don't treat Warren the same that I treat Soma, the same that I treat Steve Caballero. You know, it's all totally different. And I care about them. And I'm not pretending this and that. Like, I care about them. And what's interesting is when the pandemic came last year, I was out of state till August. So I was gone. And, you know, I would touch base with everyone and give them phone calls and email or whatever, text messages. Hey, how you doing? Da, da, da. And it was cool. But it wasn't until I got back to California in August last year that I then felt that, you know, the book started coming. And then the artist started thinking, oh, okay. Okay, Emily's back. She does care. You know, and I was like, hey, I'm calling you every other week. I do. Didn't that mean it? And it's like, nah, you got to like have a face to face and have that like genuine, like, let's go to coffee, you know, or let's, and I'm not constantly, you know, talking to the artist. Like, I don't go see Matt Hensley, who, you know, is my neighbor, and constantly talk about art. You know, we talk about our cats or whatever it is, you know, and that's what it is these relationships, because these artists aren't creating art just as art. Like, they're like pouring their hearts on their sleeves. I mean, it's intimate and it's very, very personal when they bring their art. So to trust me with it is a lot. I can't, you don't just give someone your art and say, oh, I want you to represent me or this and that. You know, it's like their music. They put their music out. And then even with the book, they're not sharing, like, you know, once upon a time I was born on this date and then I joined a band in the end or whatever. You know, that's not their stories. If you've seen the book, and it's like, yeah, yeah, they've read, like, they share these really intimate parts of their life. And I had to like push them. And I know these little parts of their lives. And so some of them I'd say, hey, you know, I think you should share about that. I think that's important and people should know about it. It was like, you think? Yes, I do. Please. I would really be happy if you shared that part. And so people start digging deeper into their lives to share these certain chapters of their, you know, of their lives. And I think that's important. But yeah, I mean, that's, have I always been like that? I don't think so. But, you know, as you know, and I guess I'll just share quickly, if you don't mind, the whole start of Punk Rock and Paintbrushes, if that.
Of course, please do. Yeah, Tim's a dear friend as well. He's been on this show and he's a beautiful man. And yeah, I love that it was born in that, you know, moment, obviously from something very traumatic, but, you know, something really beautiful's come out of it. But yeah, please do.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, I mean, the story is told often, but you know, I was diagnosed with cancer in 2006, and in 2007 I went to remission, so the next year. And yeah, so his song Survive was, you know, very important to me, and it kind of really struck with me. And so we just did this painting together, which is like like not good. We always laugh about it, but it's not like neither of us are our painters, you know, but we did it. And it was
the
like
sentiment, oh, was there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We tried hard. So, you know, I'm actually looking at the original right now. It's on my wall. It's traveled around the world with me. So, but yeah, so we did it. And, you know, and it came from this traumatic experience I went through and how music really like helped me get through it. And so I actually have like the lyrics actually tattooed down the side of my body. And, you know, long behold, Rock Against Cancer started, and we started working with different musicians and artists. And I mean, have just the most amazing, we've had such great experiences, and people step forward to be a part of Rock Against Cancer. And as you know, we worked with people who were affected by cancer and then musicians. But the whole thing with Rock Against Cancer, and this is just a personal opinion of mine, is I'm not looking for a cure for cancer tomorrow. You know, I don't know, hopefully it could come. I'm looking to better the lives of those that are going through an experience such as that, a life-threatening illness. And
what did it do for you as well? How did you get through it mentally?
it was really hard. I was very young. I was, it was like, what Hodgkin's lymphoma, you know, like, what does this even mean? You know, it was just wild. But the crazy part is that because I was living in Australia, I had moved back here and I had zero health insurance. So I had like, I had no help from anything. Like I was like selling clothing. I was sewing, designing, sewing to like put food on my plate. I'm, you know, a financially independent person. So I'm bald and sick and ill, but I need to eat my dinner, but I can't work because I'm so ill. So then I need to like sew clothing. It's like that, like that's fucked up, you know, like I need to just survive. But instead I'm thinking about my finances. I don't want anyone to experience that. I want to be able to fund someone, go, oh, you're ill. You have no insurance. You have no this. Well, let's give you $10,000 to just get you through this time frame, you know, to focus on being okay for yourself and not, you know, and so that's what we want to do is better the lives of those people, help those people out financially that are experiencing something like that. You know, even if they have other financial means, okay, well, you want to go on a trip? Well, let's send you on a trip or whatever. So that's what Rock Against Cancer began, just to, you know, better the lives of those that were in the experience that I had, that I don't really want someone to have that. It was hard, but you know, and then there's that other part of me that says, I wouldn't trade the world for that. I am so grateful and I'm so blessed that I had cancer. That sounds weird, but it's the truth.
I completely understand. I broke my back about 9 years ago now and spent 3 months in hospital whilst the bones healed and, you know, nearly died that way. And so I've definitely been not to the same place as you, but I've been to a similar place where you go through something so traumatic and painful, both emotionally and physically. But in the process of making it through to the other side, you grow so much, you learn so much, and you feel so much stronger and,
oh yeah,
just more focused in your core and more present in the moment and more grateful to be alive. And so many beautiful things do come out of these near-death, traumatic, right, horrendous experiences, don't they, that you can then apply to life going forward in positive, meaningful ways.
Oh, totally. And that's exactly it. And so, you know, when we did the painting and then we had Rock Against Cancer, and then what happened was a bunch of, you know, musicians kind of said, oh, you know, I'm an artist. I want to do a painting, a whole painting. And so that's when like I started finding out that a lot of musicians are painters. It was like, well, of course they are, you know, they're artists. That makes total sense. And I'm telling you, I still know a bunch of them out there that will not show their art still. And I'm like, hey, I want to show you. And they're amazing. Like they're amazing, but they're just like, nope, this is for me. These are just in my studio. I'm not showing anyone, you know, which is totally fine. But with that, you know, we started the next year or a few months after a Rock Against Cancer event that I knew some artists or musicians were also artists. We had an art show. We had a few people on and it was great. We put it together in like a week and a bit. It was so quick. And I was like, well, that was cool. And all of the artists that after that show contacted me and they were just saying, wow, that was kind of scary. And that was really intimate, but yeah, we should do another show, you know? And it was like, okay, let's do it, you know? So it kind of fell in my lap, you know? And so we started doing more shows and it started, you know, growing more. And then I actually had I had some art at Punk and Drublick. So that would have been in 2017, I think. So it was pretty recent. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. And so, you know, it was Mike's festival and I put the merch walls up, you know, the crated stuff. I put the merch walls up, hung some, you know, art up that was say, you know, $1,000, $2,000. And I'm like under this like dirty pop-up tent and I'm like selling art. And I was just like, okay, this is not good. You know, it was like, this is weird. This is not, I'm not, I like, there's the person next to me selling t-shirts. I have the same setup selling $1,000 art. So it was cool, but I was like, this needs to change. So we had a builder like build the entire festival, the festival exhibit, build the whole festival exhibit, design it. We had like this red carpet and lighting and huge tent. And it literally was an art gallery in the middle of a festival. And so when that started, it just kind of grew from there, because you have this built-in audience, and then these artists are constantly on the road. And so when we started doing the festivals, it was like, we have a built-in audience, you know, say the Vandals are playing, well, cool, then Warren's already here, so let's do a meet and greet. Or, you know, Blink-182 is headlining, okay, let's have Matt Skiba already come do a meet and greet. So it was so cool. So it just, like, it made so much sense, you know, it tied in those people. And we do it in a way where, you know, we'll ship out the art, we'll hold the art the whole festival, so people aren't running around with art at a music festival, you know.
Of course. Yeah.
But yeah, that just element, after that started, it just kind of started growing more and more, and more people decided, hey, I want to, you know, be a part of this. So
yeah, you should come over to the UK one day, get involved with Slam Dunk Festival over here. I know Mike is doing Punk in Drublic over here this year. He did it last year as well. He didn't do it last year. He did it the year before last year, when festivals were a thing, and I'm, you know, hoping they'll be a thing again. But yeah, it's as you say, it's that inbuilt audience, and, you know, they want that, I think, as much as anybody who likes art wants to kind of go to the source of what their tastes are. You know, people who like music are going to want to buy art by musicians that they love, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And that's it. I mean, 2020, we were booked up, you know, and we were going over there. So I guess it's not really much of a secret anymore, but yeah, so we were booked to go over there, and it was just like, okay, we're going to fly from here to there. And I was like, oh my gosh, how's this going to happen? But we'll make it happen. And it was just like, we were booked up for 10 months. I was actually out in New Zealand when everything got weird, and, got back ready to, you know, go on the road for 10 months. And yeah, well, that changed, but you know, it's okay. But yeah, that's the thing, is like, we're really now at a point where if festivals start in September, okay, so we're booked on some out there, you know, in September. And then this summer we'll do a lot of stuff with the book. And then next year it's like, you know, it's gonna, hopefully it'll be full on, and we'll be traveling the world with it, you know, and bringing these artists' art to people that want to see it. You know, that's kind of our goal. So,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, also, as well, I wrote a book last year, and I'm sure my book was born out of exactly the same circumstances as yours, which was just, oh, life's on pause right now, and you actually have the time to do it, because everything is time, right? And when you're constantly on the move and hustling and grinding and doing what it is that we do in our different lanes, when that's removed, then obviously it's heartbreaking, and it's, you know, it's sad and, you know, bad for so many reasons. But the positive in all of it is that it facilitated, I'm sure, for you guys, the time to get the stories from the artists, to accompany their work, to go in their chapters. And would you have made this book, do you think, were it not for the pandemic? At least maybe not yet, right?
No, I don't think we would have made it at, I don't think we would have made it at all. I mean, I'm busy with punk rock and paintbrushes. The artists are busy with their art, with their music, with everything. it's just not even, wouldn't even crossed our mind, you know? When I did come back in August, so it was Warren's idea, the whole book, and we were going to do art classes. And then he had said, well, let's do a book to go with the art classes. Like, okay. And I had so many ideas come to me. And I've shared this before, but it was like, well, why don't we do this virtual thing or this virtual thing? And I was like, oh my God, like another you know, I'm just, that's just not me. Or like,
I miss doing these face to face so much. Zoom's been great. It's been great. But yeah, it's just not the same. And I don't think it will ever replace the real thing, because the real thing's just that much more meaningful, isn't it?
And oh yeah. And I'm like this old, you know, definitely am a, you know, yeah, face-to-face person, and I can't get the message across. You know, all of artists, I'll call them there and then they kind of go, can you just meet up tomorrow? It's like, yes, I can. Cause you just can't get the message across, you know, whatever it is. And I want to talk to you about my art. I want to, you know, let's go look at it together, you know? And so, yeah, when the book idea, so all of these virtual things came in and all these ideas, it was like, okay, yeah, that sounds cool, I guess. Like, it's fine. You know, I wasn't stoked on it. And then, when the book idea came across my plate, it was like, oh, wow. Okay. This sounds good. And I reached out to everyone I wanted, and everyone was absolutely in. And I was like, okay, well, so let's do this. So tomorrow you're going to start writing. And I mean, so we got the idea in August, and we turned like the final book in, I think, the first week of November. So it basically got put together in a couple months, which is crazy. But at the end of the day, the artists were home. They've been reflecting on themselves for the last 8 months. They were, you know, had time to do it. They had ghostwriters, they had photographers. I just lifted everyone. I hope to lift everyone up with, you know, their team behind them. I just put everyone, I kind of scheduled everyone and helped them with, how can I help you do this? You know, so what, we didn't put together a 220 page, I didn't put together a 220 page book. I didn't write it. I wrote my chapter. Warren wrote his chapter. Jason Cruz wrote his chapter. So it was like all like a bunch of different ones, but our designer is amazing. And I mean, she did the most work, really, like putting it all together and everything. So would it have happened last year without the pandemic? No way, it wouldn't have. And then would it have happened in general? I have no idea. I don't think it would have, because we're just busy. And that's the funny thing is, you know, we didn't start Punk Rock and Paintbrushes and say, you know, one day I want to write a book, you know? I remember actually in April, when things were super strange last year, I wanted to write a memoir. I've always thought I wanted to write a memoir about my life, because there's a lot of interesting parts, I guess. And a friend, Jack Grisham from TSOL, he's a writer.
His book just arrived the other day. I just ordered it. The American Demon,
oh,
it's called, yeah?
No, which one?
Is it called American Demon?
Yes.
Yeah.
So great.
I can't wait to read it.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I called him. I remember I was in the woods in Washington, and I'm like talking to him. And I think I ordered this book on how to write a memoir, and I'm talking to him. And I just start, you know, writing a memoir. Actually, that was in April. Ordered the book and got it. And I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, I call him back in August. I'm like, okay, I'm not writing a memoir, but I'm writing this coffee table book. And he's like, okay. I'm like, let's do it. You know, and that's a cool thing too, is I had so many people I was able to reach out to, like Jack, and say, so do you do this? Do you, and like, you know, managing artists and putting on art shows versus putting out a book is a completely different situation, you know? So when I decided to do that, I speak to my brother, my oldest brother, a lot about my company, because he owns like a .com company in Silicon Valley, and you know that, but it's a lot of it's similar, you know. He guides me a lot with business matters, and I reached out and asked about the book, and he's just, you know, like, so I'm gonna put a down, basically my money for a down payment on a house, I'm gonna put towards this book. Is this a good idea? He's just like, no, don't do that, you know, because it's like you're taking a risk. It was like, okay, well, I am, but you know. And it was, and that's what it was, is this huge risk. But I thought of it, and having so many, have my thought was this with Warren in August, and having so many strange occurrences in our life, and having the pandemic happen, and just not knowing what tomorrow is going to bring, you know. And I was going to go buy a house last year. Like literally that was, I, you know, put this book out instead. And I thought to myself, I thought, what if all of a sudden, you know, what am I leaving in the world? Like you always talk about legacy. Like, what are you leaving? Okay. Well, I don't have children. You know, I'm not planning on having children. I have a family. But I thought to myself, you know, if we can put this book out and gather these pieces of information and these messages and bring them to at least 2,500 people in the world in my lifetime, I'm good. I'm good. You know, I would rather do that and send the message of what I'm hoping to send than, you know, go pass along some silly house or, you know, whatever it is. And that was kind of my motivation towards it and why I decided to take that big risk of putting it out. And, you know, and then you're putting it out in the middle of a pandemic and it was like, oh, well, do we do this? And then, you know, reaching out to these people, these supporters, and it's like, everyone's just kind of like freaked out last fall. Like, is our world ending? What's going on? It was like, I don't know, but let's just like send this message of hope, you know, cause I think we need it. And I'm so grateful that we did do it in 2020 and not 2022 and not 2025. Cause it's different. It's all different. You know, it's important that this was written during a pandemic because people that love music and that work in music, they get it. They understand what happened this last year, but people that are not involved in that community, they don't get it. And I don't think they will. I don't think they will. You know, my family, they have, you know, corporate jobs. My father was a lawyer, all that. And I explained to them how hard it's been on the music community, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. It's like, you can't explain it. You know, you can't explain that your friend who's a production manager is making 10% of their income right now, you know, or your friend that, you know, sells out stadium tours as the performer doesn't have that. And I had this situation happen over Christmas where it's not just, oh, they lost their job, right? These musicians didn't just like lose their income, let's say. They lost what they love to do, you know? They love performing and they love sharing themselves with these crowds. And it's been hard because, you know, they'll talk to people, everything's good. And that's another part of it. And then I'll get phone calls from artists I work for. And they're like, this is hard, Emily. We're not talking about art at all. We're talking about a lot of other things. They're struggling, you know, and that's, I feel really, really grateful for them to trust me and to reach out to me on a very, very personal level and to share what the pandemic brought. And so that's why a lot of it was like, well, let's do this book, you know, let's do the book. And it was so cool. So over Christmas, a friend of mine, Sarah Rose Wright, she's a photographer. She actually shot for the book, and she shot their group photos and she shot a lot of the artist photos. And she was in our like virtual show because we did feature a bunch of photographers. So she decided, you know, she thought, okay, I'm going to purchase an original from one of the artists, and it was a very pricey piece. And so her husband got it for her for Christmas present. So they got the gift. I went and got the original piece from Charlie Tuna, you know, out in like more East Los Angeles. I went down to Orange County, delivered it. I think this was on actually Christmas Eve. I think it actually was. It was on Christmas Eve because they were doing their family thing. Went back to Sarah's, delivered the piece. It was they were so stoked. They have it in their house. I mean, they just are so happy. And then I woke up the next morning and Sarah sold like six different photographs overnight. And it was just like, oh my gosh, talk about like, I don't think it's called paying it forward, but like karma. Like, what is that? You know what I mean? It's like, she decides I'm going to support this artist. And not less than 12 hours later, someone goes on the website and buys like $2,000 a painting or $2,000 of photographs. And I was like, this is so awesome. I mean, I was just like so stoked. It's like that kind of stuff. I go, okay, let's keep the train moving, you know? Because it's like those type of things are so special. And I woke up to that, like, I think it was on Christmas, and reached out and was like, you just, you know, and shared with her what happened. And she was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was so exciting. And it's just such, and like, so with that, actually, with that purchase, it was, Sarah shoots a lot of her husband's band, which is Green Day. It's mostly all, you know, Green Day pieces. And I told them, and it was so great because her husband thought, oh, let me guess who the buyer was, and knew who the girl was. And I thought, that's such a special thing, because taking this person, this buyer, her name's Kat, actually, I'll just give her a shout out, but she loves that band, you know, and I know how much Green Day means to her. You know, she shared that with me. And for the last year and a bit, she hasn't seen them live, you know, and she has had that hole in her life of where Green Day used to be and is not there. So now she has this, she can get closer to the band, her favorite band, through these photographs that, you know, that Sarah took and that Trey signed. And it's like, that's so rad. It's so rad, you know? And that's another big, like, drive and purpose of mine, is that, you know, I'm sure we all have our favorite band, right? And imagine, you know, I don't go to live shows for fun all the time now because I'm, you know, working a lot of them. But imagine being 19 and your favorite band or whatever age, and then all of a sudden, bam, not seeing live music, you know, not seeing that band for a year and a bit. It's like, oh my God, what are we going to do? So being able to connect to those bands through art or through a signed photograph is so special. You know, we're doing this Music Matters piece, and we just released the Greg Graffin piece a few weeks ago. And he was totally happy to be a part of it, which I reached out to the artist and I was like, you know, to have Greg a part of this is amazing. Like, that's really special, you know? And yeah, it sold out in 4 minutes. It's sold out because people, Bad Religion fans, are like, I need Bad Religion in my life. They want Bad Religion and they don't have it. It's not there, you know? And then they have this art piece. Well, it's not a live show, but it's something. And that's what I think is really, really wonderful with Punk Rock and Paintbrushes the last year, is that we have still tried to connect these musicians and creators to their fans. And so hopefully the book, you know, people all over the world, like, we can't go to the UK because of the pandemic still, but hopefully, you know, people all over the world can still get the book and kind of get an insight on what the artists have been going through. Like, we have social media, but, you know, it's so great. I'm so excited for all the artists to read their pieces, because I feel like some of them are going to read it and just say, oh my gosh, like, I told everyone this, you know?
Well, there's definitely a sense that you're getting to learn things about them that you don't through traditional, say, magazine interviews,
yeah,
when they're promoting their new record. It's a whole different side to their character and their soul. Before I forget this point as well, I really wanted to say, you mentioned the word a few times, connecting. And that's exactly why I do this show. And it's so important, I think, to me within this last year, particularly, to keep those connections stoked and strong. And with fans of music, you know, you're looking at an artist or a band, whatever it is, and you're a fan of their work. And I think through being a fan often of somebody's creative output, there's just a high likelihood that you're going to get on with them personally as well. Not all the time, but if you like somebody's work and what they stand for, the chances are you're going to feel the same about certain things in the world, and you're going to have certain similarities and common interests. And I find that all the time with people who either I speak to for this show, or even people who listen to my show or whatever it is. It's like when you get to meet the person who creates something that you like, there's this commonality there. And it's like, well, of course there is, because you're coming from a very similar place. And so to nurture that is very important and very special and awesome.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, whenever I speak with the artists I work with about their art and what they want to do, I always ask them, who is your favorite artist, or who is your favorite musician? Let's think about that, you know, and they'll make something. Well, like, do you think someone will like this? I go, look, because they don't know. They don't understand. You know, I've learned through, like, Tim Armstrong's in our book, and he's so loved. He's so loved by so many people, and he's just a dear friend of mine. and we talk, and I always say, okay, who's your guy? Who's your guy or who's your girl? Who's the one that you love? And like, I love Robert Smith myself, you know? And I always think that. I think if Robert Smith did this or that, would I get it? Oh, heck, whatever. What do you need? I'll like sign my soul over for anything of his, you know? And that's how a lot of these musicians are looked at, you know? They're looked at like that. So I try to bring them out of their element and go, okay, well, let's think about who's your person, you know? And then let's think about that. And they're like, okay, I get it. Yeah, okay, I get it. It's like, you're really loved. Like, you know, you're loved a lot, right? You know? And so that was the cool part. And like with Tim, actually, as you might know, but he doesn't really like to do press. And so
he's the great enigma, Tim Armstrong. He's just, he's so mysterious. And yeah, I know Dan, his manager, very well.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've asked Dan several times, like, do you think he'd do this? And he's like, nah, Lars probably will, but Tim, nah. And I respect that. You know, I think certain people just, they're not comfortable with sharing their inner thoughts, are they? They'd rather just keep it, their cards close to their chest.
Well, that's, yeah. And I've realized that with working, you know, we did a whole art tour with Rancid in 2019, and it was so awesome. And Tim really puts, you know, he puts his heart out on his sleeve, but he doesn't do press, and that's his own idea, and that's fine. And he was going to be in the book in August, and then he wasn't, and he was going to do his own book. And, you know, so he's working on different things. And then I've shared this, but we were, you know, going to print right shortly after. And we were just getting coffee or, you know, just hanging out. Tim is sober, as am I. We connect a lot on that. And so, you know, we've become very close in the last few years because we have a lot of similarities. And we were just talking, and he kind of was like, yeah, I think I want to do the book. Are you still doing the book? You know? And it was like, it's basically done, but okay. Yeah, of course, let's do it. You know? And it was like, let's do it tomorrow. And so we pulled.
And he's the first
together.
Chapter now, right? He's the first, isn't he? When you open the
yeah,
book.
Yeah, I know. How does that happen?
Last in, first
I know.
In.
Loves it. The last in, the first to come. I showed him the book last week and he's like, okay, cool. Yeah, I was like,
well, do you know what's super cool is I had no idea about his admiration and connection to Shepherd Fairey. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so you read that and you're like, oh, and he's like the guy who got him started in that lane and encouraged him to pick up a brush. And how cool is that? And, you know, that's the thing that your book does, which no other interviews that I've read with a lot of these people have shown or taught me as a fan of their work. It's like, oh, this is like an actual insight into who they are, not as a musician, but as a human and by extension an artist.
Totally. And that was actually, so it was so interesting when we were doing his chapter, you know, we pulled it all together. I had a writer and, you know, Tim was like, okay, you're going to be with me. And I'm like, yeah, totally. Like, let's, you know, it's all good. I told the writer that, you know, what we were going to do and had it all planned. And we just met up, the three of us at his studio. It was so great. And the writer actually just wrote this fiction novel. His name is Matthew Hutchison, and he wrote a fiction novel, and he was like going on about this novel to me and Tim for about 20 minutes. And me and Tim are like, what? Like, he's telling this true story. And it was so amazing to hear this like super passionate writer about his story. And then we sat there for probably 2 or 3 hours, the three of us, and just talked. We just talked, and he didn't take out a notepad. He didn't record him. Tim said, I don't want to be recorded. Okay. So he took out the notepad and he just, you know, he just knew the story. And I was like, if you have any questions, like factual questions, I can share with you. I know him well enough. But it was so great because I would, you know, pipe in here and there when I knew certain little things. And that was one thing with Shepherd, you know, Shepherd Fairey kind of elevated Tim's art and brought Tim's art to the forefront. Tim always created art, but he didn't show people. And Shepherd was the one that motivated Tim, and he still works with him very, very closely. And so when he was sharing that experience, you know, I think me and Tim like to do this, kind of give each other hard questions sometimes. And I said, okay, so Shepherd did that to you. So who are you doing that to? Or who will you do that to? Because you have to do that to someone. You know, it was like, you're in that position to do that. And he's kind of like, oh, wow. It's like, yeah, you are. Like, let's give what you were given, you know? And he said, you know, for music, he felt, he was telling me about the Interrupters, and he shared with, you know, how he has brought the Interrupters to a platform. And that's 1,000% correct. And I think, and I thought, wow, that's so amazing. And he shared the whole story with how he brought the Interrupters. And so I was like, that's great. But I think it really got him thinking like, okay, so that's what I did with music. So what about art? And that's the whole thing of it. You know, we're not like given these things in life where we're like, oh, that was nice. Let me just hold it close to my chest and not share that with anyone or do that for anyone else. You know, let me do that to whomever else. And I think that's also like with this community is to take what we have and then give it on. Because as you know, like the artists in the book, you know, they're mostly, I don't know, 40 to 50 or range, you know, whatever that looks like. But there's artists that are 18, 19, 20 musicians, but like, you know, that's not how old I am. So I'm not from that world.
Yeah,
but it's so how do we lift those people up? Like the last Warped Tour in 2018, I guess, like the last whole run, we did the California dates. Kevin brought us out and we did those dates. And we brought out some kids from Warped Tour, some musicians that were playing Warped Tour. But it's like, okay. And I'm like, I don't know these people, but it was cool. It was nice, but it was like, wow. And so that is one thing that is a goal of mine to like elevate and to bring younger adults on, and meaning like, you know, people in their 20s. Like we have one girl that I think she's in her 20s. She's an artist, but other than that, you know, everyone's a little bit older, which is totally great. And it's a tight knit community. That's for sure. But that's the question. Like, when's the next?
There's also there's two sides to that, I think, as well, which is like you're in a certain pocket, which I am too, with guests that I get on this show. You know, I'm going to speak to people that I'm interested in, that, you know, there's commonality right there. That's just a natural, I think, thing. And then the other thing is, like, to be honest, a lot of the people who are in your book probably don't appear in other press platforms, you know, because it is actually the younger bands that are getting all the coverage. Because there's almost like this thing with entertainment where it's like, once you're past a certain age, you're no longer worth anything, you know. And there's that side. So I think it's really cool that you have people like you know, Chris Sharry, and like where else are you going to read an interview with that dude? Like, and the guy, I forget his name, but the guy who did the Heavy Petting album cover for NOFX,
Mark DeSalvo.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even know of his name or his work at all. I obviously knew that infamous cover. And so for me, it was really cool to get an insight into a lot of people who just don't get any kind of coverage in even the alternative press, let alone any sort of mainstream press. So I think it's really cool that they're of a certain vintage.
Yeah. And that's
but
the thing,
as you like, say, you pay it forward too. And yeah.
Yeah. But punk rock and paintbrushes, I mean, it started as only musicians. You know, it was musicians. It was Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio, Hunter Bergen from AFI, and Warren from the Vandals. And that was kind of our little group. And it was like, oh, and Wade Newman from Under in Law. So it was like, okay, this is our thing. And then it kind of branched out. And then, you know, I share actually with me and Soma Snake Oil, we started this nonprofit together, and she came out to an art show a few, you know, years ago. And she kind of said, oh, you know, I've done art, you know, do you think I could show it to you sometime? And it was like, of course. And she's one of my best friends. It's like, oh, I didn't know that. And then she shared it, and it was like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, one of her ex's best friends buys all this art that Christmas. We're like, oh, this is good. This is cool. Okay, let's keep doing this, you know? So Soma got brought on board. And then all of a sudden, you know, Sarah Melvin, Eric's wife, is now a part of it. And, you know, and then we had Josh Freeze's son, Hunter, was in one of our shows. So it's not just like only these musicians, you know, and then we have Chris Sharry, who's worked with the Descendants, or Mark DeSalvo, you know, and so we have this, it's a community. And so when we will go out, and, you know, that even the skate community, we've branched out into more. We have an artist, Paul Kobreiger, who works with Matt Hensley's wife at Trans World. And it's like, wait, what, you know, all these like connections, but is this incredible artist. And that actually, Paul, I met through another friend of mine at Trans World, and approached him and said, okay, we have, you know, our Christmas show that's December, you know, do you want to come? And I just remember it so well, him saying, yeah, I might come for like an hour, but maybe leave. I'm just not, you know, really into crowds, or I forget what he said. I was like, that's cool. You know, and he does realism, and he comes out and then he does these, like, as you probably saw in the book, if you he does like dots with a ballpoint pen. I mean, it's unreal what he does. It's just, you know, so he brings himself, you know, he loves punk rock too. He's a skateboarder, but he loves punk rock, and he has his art up at the show. And so, yeah, Fat Mike and his friend come to the show, and I'm explaining to Mike how Paul's art is. And he's just like, what? And he's like, he brings Paul over and he's like, okay, I'm going to get this. And he like buys all of Paul's art. And I think Paul was like, okay, this is cool. I can do this. Like, not only did I just sell all my art, but Fat Mike bought my art. And, okay, I'm ready. And it was like, I always tell Mike that. I'm like, dude, you just like changed his, you just gave him that courage, you know, you gave him that courage to be a part of it. You know, oh, he's a friend of a friend, but he's not this person or that person. That does not matter. He's an amazing artist, and he's, you know, he does so well, and he travels with us. And it's like, that's the thing. And Mark DeSalvo, like, he's actually friends with Matt Skiba, how I met him. And that's how, you know, I thought, oh, well, let's have your art. And it's been so great to work with Mark, you know, and all of just like the, and then actually these girls would be amazing to interview, by the way, but they're called the Mad Twins.
Yeah. From the Ukraine. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And their story about, you know, they are, I met them through, they did work for like Social Distortion and a friend of mine in Green Day. And so they do work with bands, and that's how I kind of initially, you know, met them. And then they said, oh, I'm going to fly out for this show. I was like, okay. And they're so great, but their story is just, I mean, they live in the Ukraine, like it's gnarly, you know? And it's like, where they don't have what we have, you know, they don't have, you don't just go and go to the art store and do, you know, it's a lot different. It's a lot different, and it's a lot more difficult. And they met, I mean, they can share the story, but they met Social Distortion through like, you know, MySpace or something. And, you know, and they were saying, oh my gosh. And they love, it's like, well, you do amazing work. So these people love you guys because you're so talented and you're so interesting, you know, these twins. And so, and we all just love them. And unfortunately, like, you know, they can't be out for the show this week because they're in the Ukraine. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's cool that it's branched out into not just like those musicians, but like the families of, or friends of.
Jay Bentley's wife is an amazing painter as well. That cover that she did, again, because for me, NOFX are my favorite band, so I'm very familiar with all their cover art, but now only really learning through this book who's done certain pieces.
Yeah.
And it's Natasha, right? Jay's wife, who did the incredible
Natalia.
And she did the Cokie the Clown cover, which is an amazing piece.
Oh my gosh, she's amazing. Yeah, people look at her stuff. I mean, I've had artists look and they're like, wait, is that a painting or is that a photograph? You know, it's like, no, it's a painting. It's like, and she's like a professional. She is full-time professional artist and just such a, yeah, so amazing to have in the book. And I mean, I'm very thankful that she, you know, chose to be in the book. I know she does. I mean, she does big time stuff with the art world. And so for her to be a part of it, but it also, yeah, exactly, makes so much sense. It's like, you know, she's part of our community and through her husband, but you know, she's her art is just speaks volumes, you know? And so having,
well, her story as well, where she was saying she used to like paint punks in alleyways, and like her inspiration for a lot of her early art came from punk shows. And there's a lot of really amazing insights like that throughout the book that just take you to the core of who these people are and their roots and stuff. It's presented so well, and you know, it has the right mix of journalistic story and then the art and the visual element. It's a really well packaged collection.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's interesting is when, you know, I told people, I said, okay, you have, you know, 8 or 9 pages or whatnot, and you know, we want to do a little bit of this and that, and which I was very, very general with, and people were just like, well, so do we share this? I don't understand. Do we do this? It was like, I have no answer for you. You know, I had no direction for them, and I didn't want to give them direction. you know, and they're just kind of like, well, what do we say? I was like, you could say anything you want. You could talk about your dog on 8 pages if you want.
Yeah, each chapter has a unique feel. It has a distinct feel. There's no common style or tone to each presentation. It is unique and individual to each artist, and that's cool. It gives it more of a free, varied, fresh feel.
Yeah, and that's our, you know, that is our goal with it, is for each person to really share, like, whatever story they want to share and whatever story they want the world to know about. And I think it's important, because the thing is there a common thread in the book? There is. You have 29 people in total. There's a few chapters that are duo chapters. And they're all very different, but then at the end of the day, they're all the same. They're sharing their creativity through art, and they're kind of changing the world with their art, you know, in different ways, whatever that looks like. And that's the goal. In you know, people, again, that don't know music well, I'll say a lot, oh, I work with, you know, first of all, I try to explain to people what my, you know, what we do. And it's like, well, I work with artists, but they're career musicians, I explain. And they're like, oh, and some people will say, oh, well, you're, you know, you can't make money with music. It's like, yeah, you can very much, you know, like, you can be a successful musician. Actually, that's a thing. You can also be a very successful artist. And that's the problem, at least in the United States. It's like, go work in a corporate office, go do this and work for the man and put on your suit and tie. It's like, no, you can do whatever you'd like and you can be super successful at it. And that's kind of our goal with this book, is to share this successful artists, and that they might all have these different, you know, outlets, but they all have that common goal. Or a professional skateboarder. You know, if you had a child and that, you know, 7 years old, they said, I want to be a professional skateboarder. Someone would be like, what, you know, like, just, that doesn't make sense. And actually, I don't know if you read Christian Hosoi's story, but his is really amazing, because it's about his father. And he kind of explains how his father gave up his art career to help Christian with his skateboarding and push him forward, and kind of gave up his art to help Christian. And now Christian's in the position where he has his children, and he wants to help them succeed with what they want to do. So not to give up his skateboarding, but to push his children. Okay, my dad did this for me, I'm going to do this for my kids. And that's about, you know, it's more about a mindset. It's not about, oh, I've received all these awards with skateboarding and this and that, you know. And like right now, all of Christian's pieces that he's creating are on, his father keeps sending him these art pieces, and they're all on these packages. And so they're all on these packages. And so he's actually taking the boxes that his father is sending him and then creating art on them. And that's like all the pieces. Sorry. That's all the pieces he's going to have in this. That's all the pieces he's going to have in this show. So he's not painting on canvas. He's not painting on wood. He's painting on these boxes his father sent him, which I think is so great.
Yeah, he's a magical man, Christian Hosoi. I read his book many years ago, and just a fascinating life. And again, another sober guy, right? Another guy that's been to the edge and pulled it back, and he found salvation and redemption. And one other guy I wanted to ask you about, if you've got a few more minutes, just as we approach the end.
Yes, no problem.
Is Novak. I know he's not in the book, but I've seen you've been doing a lot of stuff together with him recently. I'd love to hear if there's any more plans to be collaborating and doing stuff with Brandon, because he's, again, just another very cool figure that does a lot, I think, to just put good energy out into the world and try and help people and elevate people. And
yeah, so that story is actually just like serendipity, because Christian Hosoi had this piece of Jay Adams, and I said, hey, you know, do you want to do prints of this? I really love this piece. And so at Christmas,
is that the
time,
one that's in the book?
That is, and yeah. That is it. Yes. And so he actually had a piece, this original piece, and I said, let's do prints of it. Christian was like, cool. And I said, you know, we can give a percentage to a nonprofit or whatever you'd like to do. And Christian said, yeah, I want to give it to my friend. He actually has this recovery house. He's a fellow skateboarder. And I thought, okay, great. Let's do that. So I talked to Brandon
and told them, you know, we want to sell these prints and then give you the, I want to give you the proceeds to your recovery house. And it was like, great. Okay, cool. So we connected and it's in Delaware. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, oh, if you're ever in Delaware, you know, let me know. It was like, oh, okay. Cause I go to Delaware, you know, like that's yeah. So, you know, so, okay, like, great. So we gave the proceeds and that was that. And, you know, and we give it to a lot, we connect with a lot of nonprofits. And so then, I was going out to do this Milo Aukerman piece to get signed. And I flew out to Philadelphia and then I kind of was like, hey, you know, I'm out on the East Coast. If you're around, like, it'd be great to catch up and, you know, just catch up and just share this, share our story. And so I told him I had to go to Delaware and he was like that, or I had to go to Delaware to meet, you know, Milo lives there. He's like, that's where my recovery house is. It was like, what? This is so weird. So, you know, 10 minutes away, I go to Brandon's recovery house. And I was like, this is really like some stars aligned here, you know? And so it's so great. So we connected, we, you know, funded him and I was like, hey, let's do more stuff together. Cause this is really a big part of my life. And I think that we should, you know, share this message more. And so, yeah, so that was great. So we did, I went out to Philadelphia where he lives and it was really nice to just connect with him. And we, because we work with a lot of skateboarders and I kind of learned more about his story and it was so great. Cause when we first sat down, you know, you meet someone face to face on a business level and you're kind of like, oh, this is what we do. And it was just like him and I was just kind of this, you know, just like, there's no filter here, you know, cause we both have been through the ringer and we just share these things. It is like, you kind of walk away like, oh wow, I just told that person a lot about me. And that was different, you know? And so, but yeah, so then actually, so with Brandon, I had reached out to see if he was in town for these book releases. And he kind of thought, well, I need to come out. So, you know, let's tie in Novak's house. So actually for Long Beach and San Diego, we're going to give a portion of the proceeds to his recovery house. And I think he's actually like going to look to get another house, I think. And so we're giving a portion of the proceeds to them. And then he's going to bring his books because he wrote 3 books as well. So it was really nice to talk to him about his books and his process. So he has his 3 books. So he's going to be at Long Beach and San Diego, which is just like, it's cool. It's just like this circle of, you know, people connecting. He's Christian's friend. And so, yeah, hopefully we do get a, you know, do some more work with him in the future. So, and he's, you know, I mean, I've learned a little bit about him in the last 6 months or so. And it's like, wow, he's definitely turned his life around in such a beautiful and positive way. So we hope we can, you know, elevate that and bring that to light more through punk rock and paintbrushes.
Yeah, it's just a case of good people doing good work together and improving the quality of, as you said at the start, everybody's journey. And it's been really nice getting an insight into what you do and who you are and where you've come from. And I hope that we can meet in person and hang out and, yeah, further connect in the real world. And, yeah, I want to just congratulate you on this beautiful little, you know, community that you're nourishing and lifting up. And the book's great. And it is available worldwide, is it? If people want to order it, they can.
Yeah, so it's available worldwide. So we have our book signing with 20 of the artists, 20 of the 29. So I was like, okay, that I'm happy about that on Saturday. And we were actually going to do it in like deep Los Angeles. And we kind of, LA's been really hit hard with the pandemic. We thought, well, let's do it in LA, but a little outside. So we're doing it in Long Beach. And the cool thing actually is we're doing it at Long Beach at a place called Alex's Bar. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's this old punk rock bar. And the owner, I swear, he does everything for that place. So it's been so cool to to give back, you know, and stay tuned for other ways we're doing some more work with them in the future. And I was like, you know, talking about this and that, he's like, well, I'm like, hey, we're here to help you. Like we have the ability to help Alex's bar, who's brought music out. So we're going to do as much as we can. So we're doing that. And then we're doing one in San Diego. We have a show in Chicago in a couple weeks, and then we're going to different places. So definitely stay tuned. We're getting all the, you know, information set, but yeah, we're really excited. I'm just excited for people to like physically have the book. So it's available worldwide, and yeah, they're starting to ship this week, which is exciting. I might do some cartwheels, I think. So
well, it's a beautiful feeling when you work so long for, you know, well, not so long in your case, I guess, but you work hard for a short period of time, and you pour your heart and soul,
you know,
into
but something. Here's the thing. I heard this recently, and we did in October last year, we did a print release with Winston Smith, who did the cover for Insomniac. We did the 25-year anniversary, and he does collage, and he's older, in his 60s or so. And he said to me once, he goes, you know, someone looked at this piece and they go, how long did this take you? Cause everything's cut out. Everything's so tiny, you know? And he goes, couple months, I think. And he goes, wait. No, it didn't. And he says, this took me 40 years to do. And that's the thing, is like, not to, yeah, you know, but that is it. How long did this book take? Well, I guess it took 2 or 3 months, but no, it didn't. Took 40 years.
This is a lifetime's work. Yeah. And you've been slowly building the pieces since you started in this world, and will continue to. Yeah.
Totally.
I love it.
And it's not, and this isn't about me though. I mean, I created the book. It's like, you know, I just heard like Anthrax is having their 40-year anniversary, and Charlie Benante's in the book. And it's like 40 years. That's 40 years that is in his chapter, you know, or any of these people. Like they've been around, you know, and I think that's the whole thing, is there's a lot of layers going on there because they've been around for so long. So
yeah,
I think it's special. I'm excited for people to just see it and read it, and I'm sure we're all going to be very happy when it's physically in people's hands. So
is it punkrockart.com is the website?
That's it. Yeah, punkrockart.com is the website.
Emily, it's been an absolute treat, and I just want to thank you for the great work that you're doing, and it's clearly making a positive impact in this world, and we're lucky to have you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.